Unit 8-6, System Security Procedures and Standards, Part A. In any software system, security should be the number one priority of administrators and developers. Enacting good security measures, in other words, handling information well and protecting it from attack, not only safeguards the business from financial and legal liability, but also is a measure of professionalism. Before implementing new EHR software, whether a commercial off-the-shelf or COTS product, or one you've developed in-house, it's important both to look for software defects that may compromise security and to establish reasonable safeguards and policies to prevent abuse and security breaches. In today's lecture, we will cover what is security and privacy of health information and some ways it can be compromised. Next, we will discuss the agencies responsible for regulating the protection of data and what your requirements are, along with some baseline practices that you can use to protect your infrastructure. Security and privacy with regards to health records are tightly governed by federal, state, and local laws. These laws govern who can legally have access to any type of health information, what measures must be taken to protect those records, how long those records must be stored, and whom to notify and what you need to do if records have been compromised. HIPAA, or the Health Insurance Portability and Accountability Act of 1996, is primarily responsible for governing the protection of individual health data. Many states have also passed legislation to further enhance these federal guidelines. Protected health information, also known as PHI or EPHI, under HIPAA, includes any individually identifiable health information. Identifiable refers not only to data that is explicitly linked to a particular individual, it also includes health information with data items which reasonably could be expected to allow individual identification. Note that the definition of PHI excludes individually identifiable health information in education records covered by the Family Educational Rights and Privacy Act, or FERPA. Employment records held by a covered entity are also exempt from this federal regulation. Under HIPAA, 18 different identifiers are recognized as providing identifiable links to individuals. 1. Names. 2. All geographical subdivisions smaller than a state, including street address, city, county, precinct, zip code, and their equivalent geocodes, except for the initial 3 digits of a zip code if, according to the current publicly available data from the Bureau of Census, 1. The geographic unit formed by combining all zip codes within the same 3 digits contains more than 20,000 people, and 2. The initial 3 digits of the zip code for such geographic units containing 20,000 or fewer people is changed to 000. 3. All elements of dates, except year, for dates directly related to an individual, including their birth date, admission dates, discharge dates, date of death, and all ages over the age of 89, and all elements of dates, including year, indicative of such age, except that such ages and elements may be aggregated into a single category of age 90 or older. 4. Phone numbers. 5. Fax numbers. 6. Electronic mail addresses. 7. Social Security numbers. 8. Medical record numbers. 9. Health plan beneficiary numbers. 10. Account numbers. 11. Certificate or license numbers. 12. Vehicle identifiers and serial numbers, including their license plate numbers. 13. Device identifiers and serial numbers. 14. Web universal resource locators, also known as URLs. 15. Internet protocol, i.e. IP address numbers. 16. Biometric identifiers, including their fingerprints or voice prints. 17. Full-face photographic images, or any comparable images. 18. Any unique identifying number, characteristic, or code. Note that this does not mean the unique code assigned by the investigator to code the data. Federal law tends to supersede state and local laws. When in doubt, or where overlap occurs, always plan on implementing the tightest control policy and contact your legal department to resolve conflicts. It is important to familiarize yourself with all of these regulations. Since local and state laws vary from state to state, we will focus today on the federally mandated rules governing health data and storage. As we alluded to earlier, the HIPAA privacy rule is a set of federal standards written to protect the privacy of patients' medical records and other health information maintained by covered entities. These entities consist of health plans, which include many governmental health programs, such as the Veterans Health Administration, Medicare and Medicaid, most doctors, hospitals, and many other health care providers, and health care clearinghouses. These standards provide patients with access to their medical records and with significant control over how their personal health information is used and disclosed. Compliance with the standards was required beginning in 2003 for most entities covered by HIPAA. The Office for Civil Rights is responsible for investigating all complaints associated with HIPAA security and privacy. However, only in 2009 did OCR assume responsibility for administering and responding to HIPAA security complaints. Since 2003, HHS, also known as the Health and Human Services, has received over 54,000 HIPAA privacy complaints, of which almost 12,000, after investigation, require changes in privacy practices and other corrective actions by covered entities. At roughly $10,000 in fines per validated complaint, there is no doubt that failure to ensure adequate safeguards can be costly to an organization. However, in the end, these losses pale in comparison when considering the organization's potential loss of reputation and patient confidence, which can take years to rebuild. The most common types of covered entities that have been required to take corrective action to achieve voluntary compliance are, in order of frequency, private practices, general hospitals, outpatient facilities, health plans. These consist of group health plans and health insurance providers, and pharmacies. From the compliance date to present, the compliance issues investigated most are, and these are compiled cumulatively in order of frequency, impermissible uses and disclosures of protected health information, lack of safeguards of protected health information, lack of patient access to their protected health information, uses or disclosures of more than the minimum necessary for protected health information, and complaints to the covered entity. The HIPAA security rule establishes national standards for the security of electronic protected health information, or EPHI. The final rule adopting HIPAA standards for security was published in the Federal Register on February 20, 2003, and specifies a series of administrative, technical, and physical security procedures that covered entities must use to assure the confidentiality of electronic protected health information. The standards are delineated into either required or addressable implementation specifications. Compliance with these standards was required as of 2005 for most entities covered by HIPAA. The security rule requires covered entities to maintain reasonable and appropriate administrative, technical, and physical safeguards to protecting EPHI. Specifically, covered entities must ensure the confidentiality, integrity, and availability of all EPHI they create, receive, maintain, or transmit. identify and protect against reasonably anticipated threats to the security or the integrity of the information. Protect against reasonably anticipated impermissible uses or disclosures, and ensure compliance by their workforce. The security role defines confidentiality to mean that EPHI is not available or disclosed to unauthorized persons. The security role's confidentiality requirements support the privacy role's prohibitions against improper uses and disclosures of EPHI. The security role also promotes the two additional goals of maintaining the integrity and the availability of EPHI. Under the security rule, integrity means that EPHI is not altered or destroyed in any unauthorized manner. Availability means that EPHI is accessible and usable on demand by an authorized person. It's important to note that the security rule was designed to offer flexible and scalable options to allow covered entities to analyze their own needs and implement solutions appropriate to their specific environments. What is appropriate for a particular covered entity will depend on the nature of the covered entity's business, as well as the covered entity's size and resources. Both the privacy rule and the security rule work in tandem to help ensure the healthcare data is properly protected. The HIPAA security rule requires covered entities to guarantee certain safeguards to protect EPHI data. These safeguards can be broken down into categories: administrative safeguards, physical safeguards, technical safeguards, and organizational requirements. Let's take a closer look at each of these categories, their requirements, and some specific options available so you can adequately address them. There are many different ways in which your system can be breached, allowing for the compromise of your sensitive data. Let's list a few of the more common approaches as outlined by Microsoft's TCP/IP Core Networking Guide. The inside job. An overwhelming majority of network security issues center around the organization's own workforce. Lack of policy understanding, laziness, or disgruntlement among workers are always threats. Training employees on the hazards of mishandling sensitive data and the importance of following both legal regulations and your organization's policies will help mitigate this risk. Social engineering is the process where someone is tricked into divulging information that allows an attacker to infiltrate a network. The most common attempt centers around pretending to be a network administrator needing the user's password to repair something in the system. Brute force attacks are just what they seem. An evildoer identifies a server on the network, perhaps by scanning for the remote desktop port, then attempts to break into the system using the administrator account and run specialized utilities that will try an endless number of passwords until it cracks the password. Eavesdropping. The majority of network communications occur in an unsecured or clear text format. An attacker who has gained access to your network can listen in on the traffic. When an attacker is eavesdropping on your communications, it is referred to as sniffing or snooping. Eavesdropping is generally the biggest security problem that administrators face in an enterprise environment. Enabling strong encryption services on your sensitive data as it traverses the network can mitigate this risk. Data modification. An attacker can modify the data in the packet without the knowledge of the sender or the receiver. This can lead to erasure or corrupted data. Identity spoofing. Most networks and operating systems use the IP address of a computer to identify a valid entity. In certain cases, it is possible for an IP address to be falsely assumed. Try not to use IP addresses as a method of ensuring connectivity to a particular device. Ensure that the device MAC addresses are utilized for connecting to a domain. Password-based attacks. Failure to use strong passwords or, whenever possible, multi-factor identification requiring more than one method of identification to authenticate to the network can lead to account compromises, potentially compromising data. denial of service attacks. Though these attacks don't usually intercept data, they can render a network virtually useless by overloading the infrastructure with unwanted traffic. Man-in-the-middle attack. This is when someone figures out a way to intercept the network traffic and captures it before sending it along to the reader. This is often the result of a compromised encryption key. Utilizing 256-bit or stronger encryption on VPN, wireless, and other communications can help offset this risk. And application layer attacks. This attack targets application servers by causing a fault in the server's operating system or applications. Once compromised, the attacker gains the ability to bypass normal access controls. The attacker takes advantage of the situation, gaining control of the application, system, or network, leaving data vulnerable. Administrative safeguards address the process you have put into place in your organization to administer security of the EPHI system. Each organization is required to identify and analyze potential risks to its EPHI, and it must implement security measures that reduce those risks and vulnerabilities to a reasonable and appropriate level. This is done using a risk analysis. A risk analysis process includes, but is not limited to, the following activities. Evaluate the likelihood and impact of potential risks to EPHI. Implement appropriate security measures to address the risks identified in the risk analysis. Document the chosen security measures and, where required, the rationale for adopting those measures. And maintain continuous, reasonable, and appropriate security protections. This should be an ongoing process. Regular reviews should be performed to evaluate the effectiveness of the security measures put in place, and newly identified potential risks to EPHI should be addressed in an ongoing fashion. A covered entity must also designate a security official who is responsible for developing and implementing its security policies and procedures. Your network security officer or person handling network security should have knowledge in both HIPAA guidelines and IT security standards. He or she should be willing to take proactive measures to ensure the safety of EPHI systems and be able to communicate effectively with and solicit support from upper management, as well as with staff and all levels of the organization. The security rule requires a covered entity to implement policies and procedures for authorizing access to EPHI only when such access is appropriate based on the user's or recipient's role within the organization. Written policies should be created, then endorsed by management, that explain the process of granting access to EPHI. This includes establishing, documenting, reviewing, and modifying a user's right of access, including termination of said access. This policy or group of policies should adequately address these questions. Who gets access to EPHI data? What level of access is needed? Who is the agent authorizing the access? Is this authorization adequately documented? Is the access periodically reviewed? And is there a process for rescinding access once it's no longer needed? The administrative safeguards also provide for appropriate authorization and supervision of workforce members who work with EPHI. A covered entity must routinely train all workforce members regarding its security policies and procedures, and it must have and apply appropriate sanctions against workforce members who violate its policies and procedures. Training can take the shape in a variety of venues to include newsletters, one-on-one consultation, media presentations, staff meetings, and the like. This training should be adequately documented for auditing purposes, including the time and date of the training, topics covered, and who attended. Training should encompass all users who may interface with EPHI in some manner, including upper management. Physical safeguards are written to address issues regarding facility access control, workstation use, workstation security, and device and media controls. This includes limiting physical access to work facilities without impeding access to those requiring access. This is particularly true in areas where EPHI may be present, including work areas, server rooms, backup media storage units, and the like. These areas require an extra level of protection to limit access to authorized users only, and wherever possible, create a structure for logging access, particularly any irregularities, such as for maintenance staff, etc., who may require entry into those locations but are not considered routine in nature. Additionally, keeping reliable hardware inventory, along with its value and its locations, is also an important safeguard in preventing theft of a system which may inadvertently contain EPHI data. Policy should also exist surrounding the acceptable use of any workstation or device or media with the potential of collecting or storing EPHI. This includes physically locking any workstations which are in public areas which may store EPHI, requiring the devices and EHR software to use strong passwords. A strong password meets the following guidelines. Is 8 to 14 characters long, or even longer, due to the way encryption works. For obvious reasons, the longer the password, the better. Contains both uppercase and lowercase letters. Contains numbers. Contains symbols. Contains a symbol in the second, third, fourth, fifth, or sixth position. Does not resemble any of your previous passwords. Passwords should not be your name, your friends or family member's name, or your login. And a password should not be a dictionary word or a common name. Passwords should be changed regularly also, on the average of maybe 180 days or so. Additionally, encryption of all storage media containing EPHI should be considered. The use of password protection instead of encryption is not an acceptable alternative for protecting EPHI. This is particularly true regarding the wireless access of EPHI, say from laptops or PDAs. Off-site access of any sort or backup media, particularly media being transported off-site, whether physically or digitally through the network. Whenever possible, the strongest methods for encryption should be utilized, preferably with 256-bit or higher encryption. Backup media should be kept locked away in a secured environment with tight access controls. Additionally, policy should be implemented prohibiting the storage of EPHI on workstations, laptops, or any unapproved device. Measures should be taken to routinely examine these devices for compliance. Likewise, when disposing hard drives or other connected media from these devices, they should be rendered completely useless after being wiped a minimum of 7 times in a manner consistent with DoD specifications. There are plenty of freeware tools in the market for this purpose. A high-powered degausser can also be used to render the drives inoperable. HIPAA also demands that sufficient measures be put into place at a technical level to guard healthcare data from a reasonable means of attack and unwanted disclosure. Technical safeguards address access controls, audit controls, integrity, user or entity authorization, and transmission security. This technical requirement mandates that a covered entity must implement technical policies and procedures that allow only authorized persons to access electronic protected health information. From a technical perspective, there are several tools that assist administrators with administering this process. Effective security practices embrace a layered approach to providing security to a network. That is, several different technologies are employed concurrently to protecting the network instead of relying solely on one approach. That way, if an attacker finds his way through one layer, he still has to overcome additional obstacles before he is successful. This would be the equivalent of adding a security alarm and dogs to your home instead of simply relying on the deadbolt lock to dissuade intruders. One such tool is Active Directory, or AD. AD allows administrators to assign policies, deploy software, and apply access rules based on users or user groups to an organization's network. It does this by storing information and settings about the users and resources in a central database. Active Directory networks are very scalable and are seen from small installations with few computers, users, and printers to large organizations with tens of thousands of users. Active Directory uses a protocol called LDAP, or Lightweight Directory Access Protocol, to allow connectivity and control access to a wide variety of management and query applications. It may be possible for your vendor to adapt your EHR system to use Active Directory to help you manage access if the software is not already configured to do so. For instance, when a new physician begins at the organization, her access would be partially governed by what Active Directory group her account was added to. Regardless, your vendor's product should come with a set of access controls already built into the software. Be sure to have a candid conversation about how these controls work and be certain that they will work in a manner consistent with the roles your organization uses for administering EPHI data. Another way to help prevent unwanted access is through the use of firewalls. A firewall is a dedicated appliance or software running on a computer, which inspects network traffic passing through it and denies or permits passage based on a set of rules or criteria. It does this by controlling access to ports. Ports are essentially communications channels that applications need to communicate with one another. Some ports are pretty common, such as port 80, which regulates web traffic. Firewalls represent an important frontline element to thwart unwanted access and help ensure HIPAA compliance. It is normally placed between the protected network where EPHI is housed and the unprotected network, and it acts like a gate to protect access. A firewall's basic task is to protect computer networks where they meet at different trust levels. For example, you very often see a firewall between the internet traffic and the internal network traffic. Many servers and workstations also have firewalls to protect yet another level of protection. It is important to note that your EHR system will require certain ports to remain open on your firewall to work properly. Work with your vendor to ensure proper ports are left open. As this picture illustrates, firewalls can be placed anywhere the network transitions from a less trusted segment to a more trusted segment. In this instance, the first firewall, the network firewall, allows some communications through as determined by the overall network needs. The second firewall, the computer firewall, is then tailored further, reducing traffic to and from the computer system to only those applications installed and running on the system itself. So, let's take a moment to recap what we've covered so far. We've talked about many facets of EPHI regulation, along with various administrative, physical, and technical safeguards available to assist you in protecting your infrastructure. We have discussed that HIPAA, along with additional state and local guidelines, requires healthcare data to be protected from unwanted and unauthorized disclosure. We have identified at least 18 different types of data in health records that are considered identifiable with regard to the federal guidelines. Healthcare data should be protected using a layered approach, including enacting numerous administrative, physical, and technical safeguards. We've also talked about how firewalls are an effective first-level technical safeguard which can be utilized to help prevent certain types of attack. Much of what you do will hinge on the type, topology, and operating systems utilized in your infrastructure. In the next part of our lecture, we will continue our discussion with some other forms of technical safeguards often utilized in healthcare settings.